Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
And the keynote speaker was rolling out this new research, and what they had discovered is that something like 70% of full-time employees would rather have a new boss than a pay raise. Think about that. We are not creating leaders who know how to lead and who people want to be, you know, sort of follow. So I think that's the other thing. Like if I were, you asked me earlier, what would I recommend to a small winery owner or whatnot? Mm-hmm. I would say they've got to do some things to support their leaders with respect to training and coaching to be sure they're building the kinds of skills and capabilities that they can be a compelling person that people want to work with and work for and create the kind of culture that people want to belong to. Because if you do that, I mean, one of the things that's fun for me is I work with a lot of the DTC hospitality oriented businesses, and some companies get the following and some don't. And when I work with the ones who get it, it's so much more fun for me as a recruiter to work with them. And that is the companies who understand that the better job you do of taking care of your employees, the better job your employees are going to do of taking care of your visitors in your tasting room.
Exactly.
And a lot of companies don't get that. And so they're wondering why they've constantly got turnover in their tasting rooms. They're wondering why they've got challenges with customers and whatnot, and they've got these problem child employees. I mean, it's because they're not doing enough to really coach, mentor, and develop those individuals and create that kind of esprit de corps and that kind of culture that people want to be a part of.
It's been coming up in my mind virtually in every podcast, which admittedly predominantly centered around people in production, viticulturalists, winemakers, cellar workers, the concept of human terroir.
Mm.
The wine industry is so focused on the term, and you know the media is going crazy over it. And it's valid in those agricultural discussions, sustainability, all of those areas are important. However, equally important is the human aspect. And it shows up in different ways. And in the way we've been discussing it for the past, you know, hour or so, and the impact, not just on the environment and physicality, but also the work environment and how people relate to each other and what shows up in the tasting room ultimately. And all this conscious and subconscious interactions, I think, have a tremendous value that rarely gets brought up.
Mm-hmm.
The discussions are centric about how do we preserve the agricultural integrity of Napa Valley, for instance. But who's doing the preserving? Yeah. Who's doing the actual work of creating an experience for a consumer? While we're so busy chasing millennial dollars, how are we relating to them? What would convince them to actually show up and buy that bottle of wine? Those discussions are not happening near enough.
Yeah.
And somebody like you, that's a clear leader, should be engaged with every single chamber, every single AVA. However, administratively, Napa Valley is broken up. You should be talking to all those resources so they can at least start thinking about it and integrating it into their conversations with their members. I mean, hopefully you have a relationship with Napa Vintners. I'm hoping. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
You know, I don't yet. However, I'm in conversation with the gentleman who is responsible for their events. And he and I have been talking about, I need to come and do my recruiting model is broken presentation to them. And I have a feeling that there will be this kind of a conversation that will stem from that. This is another one of those where I'm surrendering. And I'm trusting if that's a role that I'm meant to play, the universe is going to keep putting... I mean, maybe that's why you and I are having this conversation today.
Possibly.
I had no idea where this conversation was going to go. I'm really just thrilled with the territory we've covered. Hopefully I wasn't too long-winded there, but there was a lot to talk about. But, you know, it could be that the universe is guiding me to be that kind of... start the conversation, get people thinking about this.
That could catalyst, really be. Absolutely.
Yeah, could be.
You know, I don't... live in the valley, but I have a lot of love and ongoing goodwill that, you know, I've nurtured for many years, and part of my internal process and externalizing it in conversations is how do we actually protect the valley. It's a treasure, as far as I'm concerned. It's a national treasure.
Yeah.
And how do we protect, preserve, develop things that need to be developed and nurture? And there's a lot of people that care about the valley, and some of them, you know, are instrumental in those things, and some of them, I think, are lost and really asking themselves a lot of questions, which is a first step. But you strike me as a person whose journey took him in so many different directions, and yet decidedly you ended up here in that place right now, and you're clearly taking on mentoring roles, like paying it forward mentality, which I think is the most brilliant of all. And in that role, I think you're a phenomenal resource. And I just would really love to see you actively participate in solving those problems that the Valley is facing, because they're formidable. And some of them, you know, the whole employment issues and, you know, the ensuing traffic problems that everybody's complaining about, the fact that the Valley is becoming a tourist destination and not a wine destination. There's so many formidable things that would have to be discussed. But I think at the core of it all is, how do we address it? The thoughtful approach that we discussed, and really kind of rolling up our sleeves and getting into a state where we're ready to ask difficult questions, to be direct, to forsake the convenient and comfortable, and really try to have those uncomfortable conversations and engage people that spend decades, such as yourself, in that space where you are willing to walk away from your comfort zone. And, you know, you live by example in this case. It's not a theory. So, again, my personal hope is that all those things will start happening more actively. I get to ask you a few fun questions, I think. I think I've earned it, right? Wine. It's clearly a part of your life. You're in the valley.
Did you say wine?
Yeah, wine.
Okay.
So, wine is a great facilitator, in my view, and can be a source of great pleasure, and can be an intellectual stimulator. So, for somebody like you, what is it about wine that attracts you? What type of wines do you drink? Tell me all about that.
Wow. You ready?
Oh, yes.
And your listeners can't see this, but I'm welling up right now because, I mean, wine is an emotional experience for me. One of the things that I did early in my sort of personal growth and spiritual evolution process is I discovered there's this field of psychology called neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. And NLP is the study of how we human beings function in the world. We have five physical senses. So we have visual, auditory, kinesthetic, which is touch, and then olfactory and gustatory, taste and smell. And the brain research has discovered that most human beings function primarily out of only one or two of those five channels. The vast majority of humans in the Western civilization are visual or auditory. We're not even aware of the other three or four channels for the most part, but they're always information coming in, getting processed by the brain, stored in the brain, and influencing and shaping how we act and behave in the future. And I had the fortune of working with a number of NLP master teachers. In fact, the gentleman who conducted the wedding ceremony for my now ex-wife Colleen and I, it was Joseph Riggio. I call him Father Joseph. He's not a priest, but he is a master linguistics expert, and because he understands how the words that you use will impact the person who's receiving the words, and based on how they process information, it will have different effects on them. And so what I began to realize is the wine tasting experience is one of the only experiences that I had ever had that engaged all five of my senses. So you show up at a wine tasting, and you're immediately seeing the beautiful imagery of, for me, it's a red wine. I just love that beautiful, velvety red color of Cabernet, Merlot, Pinot Noir. There's something about that color that really speaks to me in a very deep fashion. So immediate, and then of course, you know, all the beautiful ambiance and whatever you're seeing and whatever the setting is of the dinner, the wine tasting, the taste room, the cave, whatever it is, there's a whole visual component. When you toast and you clink the glasses, well, that's an auditory component. So all of a sudden you've got your ears engaged. If there's people with you, you've got conversation going on, so your ears are getting engaged as well. Then you smell the wine, so now all of a sudden olfactory is engaged. And then you taste the wine, gustatory is engaged. And maybe you're paying attention to the coolness of the wine as it's going down your throat or the coolness of the glass in your hand. Well, what Joseph Riggio helped me to realize is that if you spend your life only operating out of one or two channels, you're not accessing all of who you are. And until you access all of who you are, you won't access all of what is available in your brain, in your unconscious. And so it's literally like if you think of this as being a rubber band, and inside of that rubber band are the one or two channels that you are operating from, and all of a sudden you have an experience and the rubber band expands, what all of a sudden incorporates all of who you are. That's who shows up at the wine tasting, at the dinner or whatever. And what I began to have is, I literally called it for the longest time a spiritual experience. I would show up at these dinners and because I was so consciously aware of which of my senses are being engaged right now, I knew that the person who I was during my work life, which was very narrow, like had my blinders on and I'm just thinking about work and whatever has to get done, that part would relax with a little bit of alcohol from the wine. And the rest of me would show up. I would be a lot more humorous. I'd be a lot more relaxed. I'd be a lot more fun-loving. I'd be a lot more able to just like have this kind of a conversation and let my mind just go everywhere and connect these weird connections that I would have never connected in the course of just a business conversation. That, for me, is the coming together of community around food, wine, and conversation. It's a really holistic spiritual experience for me. Now, you remember I told you during my healing sabbatical back in after surgery in 1998, during those 14 months that I was doing a lot of meditation, one of the other things that came to me in my meditation from that inner voice, I had basically a vision of what is a business. It's called the Sacred Goblet. And what the Sacred Goblet is a food and wine experience, probably partnered with a high-end winery and a high-end chef, creating a meal, inviting people who want to explore the conversation of the intersection of wine and spirituality. Because wine is one of the only products that has survived the upheavals of entire civilizations. I mean, the Romans have come and gone, you know. And there's something unique about wine and how it touches us. It speaks to every single socioeconomic class, every kind of career path one could pursue. I mean, it's touched the hearts and minds of artists and poets and philosophers and athletes and whatnot. It's like it has this unique ability to cross all of those boundaries and pull us all together. One of my favorite t-shirts that I probably saw 18 years ago, and I've never seen it again, and I should probably make this t-shirt and just start selling it. It had like a cartoon drawing of planet Earth with the continents and the oceans, and on the top, around the sort of the top edge of the planet, it said, water separates the people of the world. And the bottom said, wine brings them together again. I thought, you know what, that's what it is. There's something about wine that brings us together and allows us to find common ground and share more of who we are that we might not necessarily share with people just in the course of our everyday lives.
I'm so glad I asked.
Oh, by the way, on the Sacred Goblet?
Yeah.
When I was ready to work again, I literally have written a business paper, sort of a business case study paper on here's what it might look like. And the idea was it would probably be like a traveling show, and I'd pull in experts in linguistics and experts in spirituality and experts in wine and whatnot, and then I would do some of it as well. But I literally pitched this to the guy who was the head of hospitality at Robert Mondavi way back in like 2003 or 2004. He loved the concept. And he literally proposed, look, let's do this. Let's do a trial version of this. And let's just get 40 of our wine club members. We'll do a private version of this for them. That way, if you fall flat on your face, you know, you're not embarrassed. And it was, you know, hopefully a fun experience for people. And it didn't go anywhere. But if it does, let's get this thing going. I chickened out because I wasn't ready for it. I wasn't at this place of evolution and self-confidence and ability to know that I could pull something like that off. So it's sitting in the background. And as I described those dominoes unfolding and unfolding, I think I'm very close to being ready to roll out the Sacred Goblet. I've even designed a wine label. It's got a really incredible imagery of like a an angel from Europe on the top of a church kind of a thing with a goblet in hand, you know, kind of thing. So it's getting close to where I'm about to start that conversation as well. And maybe that'll be a conversation that leads into what you were suggesting, that, you know, get a conversation going about how do we preserve, you know, what's so beautiful here in Napa Valley.
You guys can't see it, regrettably, but your entire demeanor has changed once the word wine took hold.
I'm telling you, I got teary-eyed. I know.
Your body language, you look happy, you're so different, you present differently.
I'm choked up.
That is so wonderful. I mean, for a person who is so precise and has such a tremendous background in things that are science-based and, you know, really definable, to really channel the romance.
Yeah.
It's really quite remarkable to witness.
It's incredible to be. You should be on the inside of my body experiencing what I'm experiencing. It's life-changing. I mean, it's an amazing experience to be on the inside here. Every cell in my body feels like it's vibrating, like it's alive and awake. You know, we talked a little bit about my spiritual beliefs, and I'm a believer of past lives. And I know some people who are able to take you into a hypnotic trance. Mm-hmm. And take you to a place where you can access past lives. And I've done this before, and it should be no surprise, one of the past lives, I was a winemaker in Italy in the 1400s, and I literally died of a heart attack, collapsed on a barrel in the underground cellar, you know, in Italy. So it's in my blood. I know it. And I had to go through my life experiences to get to a place where I was ready to shed the past and wake up to the truth of who I really am, which is I'm a wine guy, and I've found my unique sort of path in the world of getting to experience these cool communal experiences around food, wine, and, you know, and community. But also, I can support all of that with the incredible work that I do, you know, in the industry that I love too. So it's kind of all integrated.
I can absolutely see that. So what does David Newland drink?
You know, my two all-time favorite wines, mm-hmm. wine regions. Number one is a region in Umbria, in Italy, and the grape is called Sagrantino. The region is called Montefalco, so it's Sagrantino di Montefalco. I absolutely am gaga over this wine. There's something about the earthiness of it. It probably is connecting me to that past life as a winemaker in Italy, all I know.
It's not as friendly of a grape.
It's not, but there's something about those wines that when I taste one of those wines, it just is like an explosion on the inside of me. The second area I really love is Châteauneuf du Pape.
Huh.
And there's something about, I think, the history of Europe there as well. I have a strong connection, I think, to the history of the popes. I don't know if you know this, but Châteauneuf du Pape is the only area where the popes have ever lived outside of the Vatican.
I didn't know.
The Black Plague was racing through Rome, and they were afraid that the pope was going to succumb to the Black Plague.
Yeah.
So the Vatican purchased a castle and a region from the King of France. That castle that's what Châteauneuf du Pape, the house of the pope, that's what that translates to. And so that whole region got started because of the Pope. So lived there for, I think it was 9 years, and then finally moved back to the Vatican. When I traveled there, I mean, it was like a cosmic experience for me to just feel so connected to some kind of history that I, at some level, knew. It was almost like I felt I've been here before. Something about this feels really familiar, even though it's the first time I've been here in this lifetime. It just feels too familiar for me to have not been here before. It was that kind of an experience. And then here in Northern California, I'm a huge fan of Pinot Noir. I love the Pinots from Santa Lucia Highlands and from the Russian River. And then I love Merlot. Merlot, I'm a big fan. Probably the very first eye-opening, mind-expanding experience I ever had, I was probably in my mid-20s. A friend of mine, his father, had just finished the Culinary Academy in San Francisco, and he wanted to take his family on a wine taste an excursion. I was part of their extended family, so we all jumped in a van. We came up here. We went to Farniente, Duckhorn, and Rutherford Hill. And when I tasted the Three Palms Vineyard Merlot from Duckhorn, it was like the first time I'd ever known what wine could really taste like. I could taste chocolate and taste leather and, you know, really smell those things really is what it really is. Because I also realized this idea of a wine tasting is a bit of a misnomer, because we really only have the ability to taste five tastes. When you have a wine tasting in air quotes experience, it's really a wine smelling experience, because it's the retronasals where you've got the 2,000 or 10,000 different scents and aromas chronicled. That's what awakens us. And that's why I think this idea of wine tasting is a five sensory experience. It opens us to something on the inside that gives us more access to who we really are. I think that's why for the people who love wine and these wine experiences, they don't even know it, but part of the attraction of traveling in wine country and doing great wine and food dinners is they're getting access to more of who they are, not just having that experience in the outside world.
Wow. So from the point of view of, practicality, you have such an elevated approach to life. And you asked yourself so many questions over the years, and it sounds like you found some really important...
It's so funny to hear you say that. Because I will tell you, for the first 40 years of my life, I could not have related to that. I was so not self-confident, questioning, feeling like I was just bumbling along. But what I'm realizing now in retrospect, that was the journey that my life had to go on to keep doing what you just described. I had to keep on like asking the questions and experimenting over here and exploring over there to discover who I was, so that it's now kind of coming together in a really cool way that is my unique path. Now, I can describe it, you know, if the idea is as human beings to wake up to enlightenment, and enlightenment is when you are most at home in your wholeness, there are 8.5 billion people on this planet, then there's 8.5 billion journeys home. And I'm finding mine, and everybody's finding their own unique, you know, sort of path to what they would call their home as well.
You kind of answered my question that I was about to ask. There are people out there listening that are either feeling lost or somewhere on the subconscious level just don't feel comfortable with where they are or with themselves. And that first step is so incredibly hard.
Yeah.
If you were talking to someone that's really struggling and not able to come up with that first move towards themselves, that first acknowledgement, what would you say to them?
That's easy. Give yourself the greatest gift I ever gave myself, which was that Hoffman process. Because what the Hoffman process does such a fabulous job of doing is providing a really safe, supportive coaching-based environment for you to look at what are all the thoughts rolling around in your head? What are all the emotions popping up in your body? What are all the behaviors that you're doing? Some of which are supportive, some are self-destructive, that belong to your father. Which ones belong to your mom? And who are you really? Because you have to learn what you took on unconsciously from your parents or your caregivers. And you have to have a vehicle for beginning to let those go. And like, you remember that visually, I have this visual, and you know, this might not work for some people, but it really works for me. When I meditate sometimes about who I am at the core, I know that I've got a lot of layers that got added on because of my childhood experiences that were from my dad and from my mom. And, you know, everybody can probably remember the visual image of September 11th, you know, 9/11, when the World Trade Centers all of a sudden started crumbling at the top and just collapsing upon themselves. Well, I literally imagine myself being like that and having these external layers that are not me, they're from my mom or my dad, having them start to crumble on the outside and collapse down and around me. And what's left on the inside is almost like a bright light. It's just who I am. And I actually have a saying posted on my wall in the office in the next room over there. And it says something like, what if the journey of life was not so much about trying to become who you're supposed to be, but about letting go of who you're not so you can just be who you already were to start with? And when I sit with that and I think about the crumbling down of the exterior, that's really what I think the journey, and people who are feeling lost, they're over-identified with all that exterior structure, all of that, those exterior parts that they think are who they are, but they really belong to somebody else. And they've got to go through a safe, supportive, well-orchestrated process of being able to let that stuff go and then discover who they are. And from that place of knowing who they are, you've got to reinforce operating from that place so that you can start to move in the world and start to make decisions and start to interact with people from that more centered, grounded place of knowing who you really are. And then your life starts to go on a different journey. And that's kind of what my whole life has been about, is finding my path, my journey, and letting go of the stuff that's not me.
You know, the more we talk, the more doors open in my mind. I could ask you a million questions.
Maybe there's a part two.
Yes, I was about to say that. I'm going to thank you for your grace and wisdom and sincerity. And I hope those that are listening took to heart the many life lessons that you've imparted on us. And I would encourage you guys to write and ask questions so we can have a part two, because I think it's much more important they come from you than me. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you, Alona. This is, like I said, I had no idea what we were going to do. This is such a cool surprise. And I'm just grateful that I had the opportunity to have this conversation with you. And so if it inspires people to write questions and whatnot, I'd be thrilled to come back and do a round two. It'd be awesome.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palette Exposure featuring Alona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.